Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
It's Wednesday already, and I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 2nd, 2011, episode 263, sponsored by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi everybody.
Hi everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jamie.
Two more shows. Just two more.
Two more shows? And then you quit?
Two more shows. No, the time change happens because there's a Thursday show and then Friday show, which I'm not even on. So really one more show and then the time change happens, which means it is going to be 7 a.m. for me as opposed to 6 a.m., which means I can get up at 6 a.m. instead of 5 a.m. God, this is going to be awesome.
You get an extra whole hour. And that's only because you live in a weird little time continuum there in Arizona.
Yeah, they're weird here. They don't do the time change. So, yes, it's going to be getting dark at like 5 o'clock at night. But I guess
so
it's happen all over
all,
the place.
Aren't you always driving in and out of different time zones? Do you have to, if you like, if you go into a business that's an hour away, do you have to like go, okay, now is that in a different time zone? Is it constantly like that?
Well, we talk to our family in Oklahoma or our family in California. We have to constantly do the math. Like, okay, now are we in California's time zone right now or are we not? Now, what is it, Oklahoma 2 hours right now or is it just 1 hour? And if I call my mom, I'm like, is it 3 hours or 2 hours? Yes, it sucks. So it's confusing
and
it's ridiculous.
I have to wonder, too, about those people who live right on the line of a time zone change. Do they have to, like, wear a watch in each hand or, you know, because that side of town is one time zone and this side of town is another time zone?
Do you wonder that, too? I wonder that. I'm like, what do they do? Like, if their school starts at 7 a.m., does it really start at 6 a.m. where they live? And if they go to the bank, is there different hours because they had to go west instead of east? It's so confusing.
So if you live on the border, if your house is divided in half by a time zone, let us know. Write in on our Facebook page or give us a call at 347-637-3238. We want to know what you do and how your life is because that little stuff fascinates me.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Well, that's good fun talk for a Wednesday morning. Jennifer, save us here.
On today's Omega Alpha Wednesday edition, we head on out to the first thing, to the pad. The Diamond Wool Pad, that is. Jim Fay from Diamond Wool Pad Company is here to explain to us wool fiber fledglings, the fundamentals of a good wool foundation. And to continue on the soft, protective, impact-dissipating theme, thehorse.com is here, as usual, with some fantastic info about protective leg gear for your horse. So stay tuned for the well-padded ride.
All right, thank you. Before we get to our Daily Winnies today, I just, you know, the show that we got, the show that the ghosts got us on Halloween Day. Remember Monday we tried to do a show and then Blog Talk went down. And I had the challenge on Monday, which only the people hearing live ever heard, where I was supposed to eat one of each of the top five candy bars. Remember that, Jamie?
I do, and from what I recall, you had given yourself the entire show. I shortened it to a half an hour.
Yes, well, we never even got through a half an hour. I made it, I set an hour by 10 o'clock. So that's what I did. I thought in the interest of preserving the integrity of the show, I would continue to eat the candy bars even though we were off the air.
Oh, I'm sure it was so difficult for you.
I got to tell you, by the last candy bar, I was getting a little tired of chocolate. But, you know, this is what happened to me after. So I had eaten five full-size candy bars and a bag of Skittles or whatever. And I get to, you know, like an hour later, I had a headache. And then we're recording the driving show. Wendy comes over in the afternoons at 2 o'clock on Monday to record a driving show. Well, I was still doing okay. I was still had my little bit of my sugar buzz going on there. So we're sitting in the studio, and she's going into her Chinese medicine tip update thing. And I just could not stop yawning. I crashed. I had a sugar crash. And I'm yawning. And she's sitting right here. Of course, you know, when I yawn normally when I'm doing shows with like you, you don't see it, so you don't get insulted. Well, she's sitting right here. And after we were done with the show, she said, "Was I that boring today? Was it that bad?" And I said, "No, I was sugar crashing. I just couldn't help it. I could not stay awake during that segment. It was bad."
You yawn when I'm talking? Is that what I just heard? Really?
I have a mute button, so you don't hear me yawning and going, "Oh, my God, I can't believe she's saying that again." And
uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. I need one of those because you exhaust me, too. <No. laughs> Well, yeah, right. I can imagine. I wonder what it did to your, like, biological system, you know, with having that much sugar and fat injected directly into your...
I gained three pounds, I think.
Your liver and your kidneys must take, like, the insulin production. I don't know. I just know about Cushing's disease, and that much sugar must have really pushed a lot of insulin in your system.
You know what? I noticed my neck was a little crusty.
Did you get a little bubbles on your butt and your neck got a little crusty? Aw, did your feet hurt? Did your feet start to hurt?
My Daily Winnie goes out to our friends in Australia. Mel Donald posted on our page, said, "Finally catching up on my hit of listening and thought I'd post a pic of Big Red, a.k.a. Farlap, for you guys. I went and visited Farlap in 2009, and wouldn't you know it, he's so real you'd think he's about to walk out of that case. Remember we talked about Farlap last week in the movie, and we talked about how he stuffed, and you thought that was pretty gross? Well, he says, for all Aussies, visiting Farlap is a pilgrimage. There is nothing icky about him. He has his own room at the museum. In fact, the Melbourne Museum is all about Farlap. Forget the other exhibits. This boy is the jewel of their collection, and they darn well let you know that. Watch the DVD. It's fabulous. Love the show. P.S. Farlap beats the stuffing out of old Tigger any day. Just saying."
Trigger.
Trigger. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, sorry. Trigger.
Comments.
We had a horse
that.
Named Tigger.
Did you really?
Yes.
Well, first of all, of course Farlap beats the stuffing out of Trigger. Trigger was a trick horse. Farlap was like one of the greatest race horses of all time. Second of all, what grossed me out was the fact that the heart was in one location, the skeleton was in another location, and yet the skin was at the Melbourne Museum. Now, I believe they're bringing all of that together, but the skeleton wasn't put together very well. And it made Farlap, according to the Aussies, look like he was kind of slouching and not put together very well. And he didn't look like the famed racehorse he was supposed to be. So they've like rebuilt Farlap's skeleton and they're going to display it with the skin and the heart and all that. You know, looking at, she actually posted a picture that she took from Melded from the museum, and it's really, she's right, it does look like Farlap's about to walk out of there. It's pretty impressive.
It does, very realistic, actually. If I saw that, I would have thought it was a sculpture and not the actual stuffing.
Skin. Yeah, exactly. It's a good taxidermy right there. Okay. Well, thanks for posting.
That's what
that
everybody likes.
Listening.
Good taxidermy talk in the morning. That's what we do for you here on Horses in the Morning. Come and get your taxidermy today.
I love it.
Well, thank you, Mel. I'm not sure whether this particular Mel is a male or female. So, Mel, thank you very much. We appreciate you listening. And then it started a little war because every time we mentioned Farlap, Simone pipes up and says, and of course, he was actually a New Zealand horse and should be here because there's still a battle that's going on between the New Zealanders and the Aussies about who really owns the naming rights to Farlap. So.
Well, yeah, because Farlap was born in New Zealand but raised in Australia, so people seriously get really upset. Like, it is like a, not like they're bordering, but a border war between the two countries.
I think we should get Mel and Simone on at the same time and have a little debate. That'd be fun.
I love it. I love it.
and we can just sit back and listen to the wonderful accent and just enjoy the whole thing. That'd be great.
Let's do it.
Here you go.
All right, we've been talking New Zealand and Australia. I'm going to bring it back home. So close to home, Glenn, that I'm actually focusing in right now on Lexington, Kentucky. And I'm going to focus in on Lexington, Kentucky for next April, which, of course, the third weekend in April usually is Rolex Kentucky three-day event. Now, I would like to let you know that my coach is planning on attending. She has qualified, so we're going to be cheering along.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Are you going to be grooming?
Going to be there. I don't think that I'm qualified to groom for a four-star event because I'm not good enough. Oh, just spit on it. It'll be okay. No, this is a four-star. So, I'll just be, I'll be cheering. But tickets went on sale yesterday. So, go, and right now, because when they sell the stadium tickets, the best ones go first. So, I'm giving you the heads up, rk3de.org. That's the website you need to go to get your tickets. Obviously, you know, you can do the packages. They have the patron package and the sponsor package, which you can spend a lot of money and stay in their tents and have watch their flat screens and have these catered meals, and it's fantastic. Or you can slum it like I do, which is like schlepping yourself and your seat and your dog across the cross-country course all day long, walking around, trying to hide from Glenn, who's also walking around out there.
But you know what, though? You did slum it last year. You had media passes. You did pretty good last year.
Yeah, that's the first time in ever that I've not slummed it. So slumming it is just as fun. And you get to get your general admission for cross country and then go get your seat for dressage and your seat for show jumping. That is, if you go to all of them, you know, it depends on what your work schedule is, obviously. But it is a pilgrimage that you need to take. April 26th through the 29th of 2012. Tickets are on sale as of yesterday. Go check it out. Take a bunch of girlfriends. Get a hotel room. Party all night. Walk the cross-country course all day. It is super fun to do with your girlfriends. And it is definitely an annual pilgrimage that women, I guess, and some men, whatever, if you want to come. So women from around the world need to do. And it's awesome shopping. Best shopping ever.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was over at the horse park yesterday. We were setting up at the All-Tech National Horse Show. Did you see the picture on the Facebook page of Chris and I out in the arena there?
Yes. The first time I've seen pictures of that arena because I never went in it. And it is gorgeous.
Oh, it is a beautiful arena, and they have it all decked out for the National Horse Show. It's just absolutely beautiful. I have to thank the folks over there at All-Tech and the organizers of the National Horse Show because they have us set up literally, Jamie, right inside the front door. Everybody that walks in sees our little recording studio we have set up there. Chris is going to be doing the jumping radio show, recording that on and off all week, and then, of course, we're doing the live show, Horses in the Morning, from there on Friday morning. So Chris and I were over there getting set up and checking things out, and that's where the picture came from. But it is absolutely beautiful. They were practicing, they're setting up the sound system and practicing for some of the music that's going to happen during this. And, oh, my God, Ronan Tynan, who's a unbelievable, I guess you could consider him like one of the tenor guys that you've always heard about. I swore that windows were going to break when he was singing in that place. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just, and Everett McCorvey was there. And, you know, remember
really?
Everett, because he's the one, he's this guy.
Oh, what a beauty.
He's the one that did that for us.
Well,
so,
and he sings
was,
the national anthem a lot at Rolex, actually. And he's amazing.
He was singing the national anthem there with like four or five of his chorus from the college, from UK. And again, unbelievable. You know, you had goosebumps and you just wanted to stand up and cheer, and there was nobody in the stadium. And by the way,
$10 for admission right there.
The sound systems are so much louder when there's no one in the stadium. It's so much louder. It was fun. It was definitely a fun time, and it's going to be a good week over there. I'm hoping to get over there tomorrow afternoon to watch for a while before we do our show from there on Friday morning.
Cool.
So that's what's going on at the All-Tech National Horse Show going on right now at the Kentucky Horse Park. No really bad ads this week because we are going to be coming live from It's going to be Chris and I coming live from the horse show from the All-Tech National Horse Show on Friday morning. And I really didn't think Chris would be all that good at reading the really bad ads.
Well, not that she would not be good at it. She just would find it beneath her.
That's right, I think.
I mean, some of us don't mind embarrassing ourselves in public. Chris is not one of those people. So she's not going to sing. She's not going to read with no breath. And she's not going to yell. Nothing, anything like that. So respect, Chris. And it's going to be an educating and informative show.
Basically, what Jamie's trying to say in a nice way is the two people in the network that we allow to act like idiots or that will act like idiots are Jamie and Glenn. And that's why we do the show.
Yeah, well. You know, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, this is Wednesday, list day. You know, we always do
Yay!
A list on Wednesday. So
you always do a list.
Why?
You
have
always
one.
Get to do it. I have it, too, and I'm going to do it because it is the best list that we have ever come up with. And by we, I mean you.
Wait a minute. I have a list of the top 10 amounts that was ever paid in a celebrity divorce, and what brought that up is Kim Kardashian getting divorced already. So that's what I have. What do you have?
I have the top 10 female racehorses of all time by Sports Illustrated.
Jennifer, which do you want to hear?
Which do I want to hear?
Yeah.
I want to hear the racehorses.
Yeah! That's right, sucka.
All right, I
The top 10 female racehorses of all time by Sports Illustrated. Now, I want you to start thinking, who are some of the greatest female racehorses that I know of? Start putting them in your head, and I'll let you know where they fall in, because I was able to write down about six of them with just thinking before I read the article, and I got about six of them right, but there's some of them, like, you're like, oh, my God, duh. Number 10 ran in 1970, and her name was Ta Wee, and it's a Sioux word for beautiful girl. Well, she had 15 victories in her 3-year career, and she won all sorts of stuff up in New England. So Ta Wee, number 10. Number 9, Rags to Riches. That's right, the horse. The filly that won the Belmont Stakes in 2007 and kept Curlin from winning the Triple Crown. Well, unfortunately, Rags to Riches' career was cut short. She suffered a hairline fracture in late 2007, so she is, I'm sure, pregnant right now. Number 8.
I forgot about Rags to Riches. That was one I had forgotten about.
Oh, man. You know, as much as I wanted to see a Triple Crown winner, I just could not pull for the girl in the Belmont. You know, she was such a tough mare, just big, tough, giant mare, and you just had to pull for her, even though I loved Curlin, too. It was definitely like, remember in the race, the pre-race for the Belmont, all the girl power stuff, and I really think that kind of, like, opened the door for Zenyatta with the whole girl power and females coming together, cheering for a racehorse. It was awesome.
I was just wondering whatever happened to Rags to Riches.
I'm pretty sure she's pregnant right now. Just Google Rags to Riches and see where she is.
All right, I'm looking that up. You do the next one. I'll find out where she
is. Number eight, winning colors. The number eight female racehorse of all time, winning colors. And if you recall, I can't remember the year, but it was like 83, that winning colors won the Kentucky Derby. There's only one horse to have ever, one filly to have done that before, who is not on the list. And that was a horse named Regret, and I believe that was in like 1913. So obviously these are some horses that are a little bit more recent, I guess. But number eight, winning colors, who passed away at the age of 23 due to colic complications, but did provide several foals.
All right, Rags to Riches. Oh. I have the update. Rags to Riches. Actually, she was sent to broodmare duty at Ashford Stud right here in Versailles, Kentucky on March 9, 2009, gave birth to her first foal, a filly by Giants Causeway named Riches Causeway. She was then bred to Henry the Navigator, and then she foaled a colt by Galileo in 2011 and has been bred back to Galileo. So that she's still here doing her motherly duty at Ashford Stud.
Why is she not in foal to Bernardini? Why is she not in foal to, like, a couple years ago, AP Indy? She should really, I mean, maybe she's AP Indy line, but she should really could have stepped it up, I would think, with the studs, but that's just my opinion. Sorry, if the owners of whoever that was are listening. Number seven, if you recall, and you cannot go into a home in Lexington, Kentucky without seeing this mare's picture on the wall, Genuine Risk. Genuine Risk. In 1980, she won the Kentucky Derby in 1980 and finished in the money in each of the Triple Crown events. So she finished 10 and 15 and earned about $650,000, which in 1980 is a really big deal. Number six, Lady Secret. One of the, pretty much the only successful, I'm not going to say that. One of the more successful daughters of Secretariat, as far as racing goes. Secretariat did throw a lot of really good broodmares. However, Lady Secret was, I believe, his most successful baby foal that came out. And she was 25 and 45. She was 1986's Horse of the Year. Nickname was the Iron Lady. She won, check this out, 8 Grade one stakes in one season. That's ridiculous. To run 8 grade one stakes, but then to win them all is fantastic. Number five, we're all going to remember the 2009 Horse of the Year, hotly contested by nobody other than myself. Why Rachel Alexander won Horse of the Year in 2009 and wasn't Zenyatta? I don't know. So, yes, this is an amazing filly. Yes, I do still. I have contention with the whole 2009 Horse of the Year. It's like they were rubbing it in by writing that down. she was the first filly in 85 years to win the Preakness Stakes. She beat Mind That Bird and Calvin Burrell. And why do they got to put this in there? This is Sports Illustrated, okay? Rachel Alexandra is the first filly to ever pose in Vogue in 2009. Well, whatever.
I am surprised there is that I would have predicted Rachel Alexander to be higher in the list.
Higher than number five?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Just because she's top of mind. But then you realize the horses that are beneath as far as number four is Azari, which who was trained by another woman, was 17 and 24. So she had 17 wins and 24 starts. And she was, at that point, the current money winner at $4,079,000 when she retired in 2004. So Azari was one. Number three, Personal Ensign. You remember that name. 13 for 13. She retired undefeated in 1989, and she beat Winning Colors in the Breeders' Cup. And, of course, Winning Colors was the one who won the Kentucky Derby. Number two. Undisputed in my book. Number two, greatest racehorse. Yes.
There was only one other one I had on my list other than the one that I think is number one, and that was Ruffian.
Exactly. Ruffian ran in the 1970s, and I can't even talk about it. That's about all I can tell you without crying talking about Ruffian. Now, if you do have like an evening where you had a really tough week, and you just, you know, as women, sometimes we just need a good cry. If you need a good cry, go ahead and rent the movie. If you really want to knock yourself out, get Farlap and Ruffian. But we've talked about Farlap. So Ruffian, the movie, she was in a match race with a horse named Foolish Pleasure, who was, it was like Battle of the Sexes race. And she would have won. That's all I'm going to say. But Ruffian, if you want to see that movie, I can't even see, okay, I'm done. Number one. Ruffian.
Let me guess.
Number one.
Did I get it right?
You sure did. Without a doubt. The number one female racehorse of all time. In 2009, became the first female to ever win the Breeders' Cup Classic, came from 10 lengths back to beat Gio Ponti, who will be in the Breeders' Cup this year as well. She may have lost the 2010 Breeders' Cup by a nose, but she did win 2010 Horse of the Year, without a doubt, uncontested. Best in Flame, the only horse to ever defeat her on the racetrack. Crank it up.
Know. It's all about her, so she points her toes. She busts out her best moves and she gets down low. Yeah, the big mama knows how to put on the show.
Everybody
and yada, she's gonna be last from the gate. She'll be last at the house.
I think that's all I can take.
I really should learn the words to that song so I can sing it to you all
yadas,
the time.
And yadas, and yadas, and yadas, that's all I know.
So
hey, we have a caller we have to take here quick, who has an announcement, and it's right along the lines of racing. Can I take that? Let me take this caller. This is our adopted bug, jockey in training, Callie, who's calling in, I think, with a big announcement, and I just heard it 2 minutes ago. Good morning, Callie.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing
Callie.
Great. You have news for us? This is exciting. What's the news? What's the news? What's the news?
I do. I just got my internship all set up, and I will be headed down to Florida in between either Gulfstream or Palm Meadows Training Center with Todd Pletcher.
Woohoo!
Oh, my God.
Look at you.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Kelly, who's Todd Pletcher? Never heard of him.
Oh, he's only won the Eclipse Award like 15 million times, and he has like another million racetrack trainer, leading trainer meet titles. He won the Kentucky Derby this year, and he's pretty much the Philip Dutton of racing.
Yeah,
how
good.
I mean, how excited are you? You must be like bubbling over.
Yeah, it's you know. Chris called me yesterday to tell me the news, and I spent about 15 minutes in the car having a little screaming and party fest, but I've calmed down a bit since then. But I went over to Churchill this morning to introduce myself to him, and it was a great time. Watched a couple sets that are Breeders' Cup contenders, and it was very, very cool.
Hold up. You went to Churchill Downs this morning to introduce yourself to Todd Pletcher?
Yes.
Three days before the Breeders' Cup?
Yes.
Oh, my God, you're like the coolest girl I've ever met. That's awesome. So who'd you see work? Did you see Uncle Mo get out there? Did you see – who'd you see?
I saw everybody was galloping besides Aconite, who's jogging, but I got to see Uncle Mo – Cindy's Candy, Stay Thirsty. Oh, my goodness. Who else? That's all I can totally remember as far as contenders.
So what's the buzz out there? What's the buzz as far as a classic? I mean, are people leaning towards Uncle Mo, Stay Thirsty? Who's the buzz?
It really depends on the Uncle Mo situation. It depends how much you liked him before all this hoopla happened. Reportedly, he didn't, and I watched the work on TVG's The Works program, and he did not have the best work, but apparently that's what he does before he was a big racist, so I guess that's fine. Of course, now I'm kind of in the Pletcher thing. I'm definitely rooting for Uncle Mo and both Stay Thirsty, but both of them look great this morning.
Okay. So who's your pick for the classic then? Pick one. And then maybe do an exacta where you pick number one and number two.
I've only done half of my research, and I probably could not give you an answer until Friday morning. So I can't give you an answer right now.
it's a cop-out. I'm going to call you Friday morning.
Yeah, she's holding
out
on us. She wants to keep her new job.
I mean, yeah, you can't piss him off. He's the trainer, and the owner is the same owner, you know. So Michael Poli owns both horses, so you're going to make mad.
Yep.
I know what it is. I got it, Kelly. You're pulling for Haffer to Grace, aren't you? European horse.
You know, I actually kind of am. I'm a big fan of that filly. She's really nice.
I love it. Okay, I won't tell him. No, but he didn't hear this. He doesn't listen. It's Todd Pletcher, for God's sake. He's a little busy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, congratulations, Kelly. Okay. This is fantastic. I'm so excited for you. You know, we talked to you a couple months ago, and you weren't even sure, you know, where or what the internship was going to be. And now to be to be there with one of the top trainers, and I'm sure he's going to work your butt off, but you are going to learn so much.
Oh, my gosh. I am so excited to get on the quality of horses that I'm going to be getting on. It's amazing, you know. Pletcher's ranked number one, and it's, you know, you can't, as far as the U.S., you can't get any better than that. I mean, it's just, I'm just excited for the, you know, nice horses that I'm going to be getting on. I'm just going to learn so much. I'm very excited.
Yay! Very good. Well, thank you for calling us, Kelly. This is terrific news, and we're very excited for you. Does that mean when you're working with him, you'll never talk to us again because you're going to be too important?
Maybe. No, of course not.
At least she's honest.
She's going to be like, here, Todd, please talk to these people, okay? I've got to go gallop.
These annoying people keep bothering me.
Now, I would like to tell you that we did interview Todd Pletcher one time, Callie. When I was applying for a job, I pulled some strings, and I was trying to impress Glenn and get the job, and so we had Todd Pletcher right out. You know, it was not too far up to the Derby, and we were talking about Uncle Mo coming up to, you know, last year, and it was going to be an awesome interview. And guess what? Glenn deleted it. He deleted it.
Oh, my gosh, Glenn.
Seriously.
I messed up.
All you people out there, we did interview Todd Pletcher, and I booked him, and Glenn deleted it. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Actually, there's no real evidence that we did interview Todd Pletcher.
Yes, because you deleted it.
Unbelievable.
Sorry, Jamie. And that was her audition, actually. That was part of her audition to do this show. And look, you got it anyway, so...
I got the job, but I want the interview back.
Well, that's pretty cool still. Yeah.
I think Callie will be able to get us an interview someday after she's a superstar in Todd Pletcher's barn.
Yeah, I know. No, she's going to be a star. She's going to be like, whatever, interview. I was hanging out with Todd Pletcher this morning at Churchill on the backstretch watching his horses run. That's the coolest. Screw my interview.
It was very cool to just see how his barn works and how everything runs, and it was very cool.
Well, Kelly,
I can't wait to
interview
you later on. Yeah. Good luck, girl.
Thank you so much, guys.
All right, see you, Kelly.
See ya.
Do we know how to pick them or what?
You're good.
Look, we picked Jessica Phoenix
2 years, 3 years ago, and now she's a gold medalist. We picked Callie, who's going to be the superstar in Todd Fletcher's barn. She's been sick, by the way. She's had something that has knocked her out for about 3 weeks, and she missed all getting to catch the rides in the morning at Keeneland for 3 weeks. So she was kind of down a little bit last time Jennifer saw her out at the barn, and so she didn't sound so down this morning. I think all of a sudden she's feeling better.
Good. Well, she must impress somebody, that's for sure.
Yep. All right, let's talk about our sponsor today, Omega Alpha, and then we're going to come back with our first guest today, who is one of our Norco sponsors for our Norco trip, and that's Jim Fay from Diamond Wool Pads.
Well, at Omega Alpha, we all care about what we feed our horses and probably, you know, sometimes more than what we feed ourselves. And Omega Alpha also cares about what goes into your horses and ponies. And that's why Omega Alpha uses only natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using the finest natural ingredients available. The other difference with Omega Alpha is the science that goes into their products. Dr. Chang, who we've had on the show 100 times, is well-respected in the industry and is a pioneer for putting the right natural ingredients together to make formulations that work for your horse. They have a wide range of products available to you, and you can see them all at omegaalpha.ca. That is omegaalpha.ca.
And Dr. Chang will be here on Monday, actually, doing the next update with us, talking about nutrition. And while we're waiting for our guest to get on here, our guest is a company that has sponsored part of our trip to Norco, California, which is coming up in about 4 weeks now. Starting to get really excited. And I talked to Lisa, who has helped organizing that. Thank you very much, Lisa. And she said that all the arrangements are coming into place, that the town is very excited to have us there. She was at the banner company yesterday because they're putting a 30-foot banner across Main Street welcoming us to town. So as we pull into town, we are going to see our names on a 30-foot banner across Main Street. Isn't that cool?
God, you're like such a little kid.
I am. I'm very excited. I am a little kid.
You're going to be like, I have that banner when we leave?
I'm going to. I already asked. You bet. It's going to hang out. It's going to hang across the studio. I might even cover up the Carrie Underwood poster with the banner. All right, let's get to our first guest here today. His name is Jim Fay. He's with Diamond Wool Pads, and we're going to be talking saddle pads today. And, you know, what's the good ones? How do we tell good ones from bad ones? You know, is wool better than other things? We'll find all of that out with Jim. Let's welcome him. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How do you tell good ones from bad ones? You look for the brand name on the pad. If it says Diamond Wool, it's a good one.
It's a good one, right.
You should
know
that.
You know, we've been in the tack business, my wife and I, since the middle 90s, and so we know that your name on a pad means a good one. So
well, thank you.
First, tell us a little bit. By the way, thank you very much for helping to sponsor our trip to Norco. We're very excited about that, and I know that the Norconians are as well. So tell us a little bit about...
You got the phone call to hold the check, didn't you?
I'm not even handling the check, so I'm okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm good with that.
I'm only kidding, Glenn.
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the history of Diamond Wool. Tell us about the company.
Well, the company's 20 years old, and it's kind of a human interest story. There was a company. We're in Rhode Island, in case you don't know. Which New England at one time was the textile capital of the world. I guess you do know that.
Yep, that's right.
But anyway, there was a company in existence called Perforated Pad. Actually existed before the turn of the century. Not this century, the century before. And that company came up for sale. My son had just gotten out of college, worked for 3 years in sales, and decided he wanted to have his own business. So we took a look at the company, and unfortunately, there was nothing to buy. So we bought the equipment at an IRS auction, and off we went. That was 20 years ago. Now we're
What did you know about making pads at that point?
Absolutely,
when you bought the company?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing.
Were
didn't
you
know
horse
the
people?
Front. Not horse people at all.
Oh, okay.
But we've learned an awful lot in the past 20 years, and we're still not really horse people. We're textile people.
Right.
And,
which is probably
that's why we make a good pad. Yeah, when we came into the business, there was a lot of junk out there. There was a lot of jute, what you call jute, flimsy floor sweepings, felted together and made into pads. One time, years ago, they used to use use horsehair, but that's all gone by the boards now. So we brought, we introduced wool felt, serious wool felt, into the industry, and now it's, you know, it's a very competitive business. But we're the only company out there that I know of. All we do is saddle pads. That's our business. Saddle pads,
well,
A to Z.
I know that you guys are known for doing the pads that are quality, and they're still made in the United States, right?
Everything's made in the United States of America.
Another good point for us here.
Everything is domestically manufactured and fabricated in the United States. The only exception to that is when you get into these show blankets. They either come in from Mexico or India. Okay. You know what I mean by the show blanket?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you guys, what I was surprised at is I didn't realize you did English.
Yeah, well, that's another story, another curveball. At one time, we had English products, a few English products in our catalog. But as time went along, our strength was in the Western. The problem on the English side is, you know, most of your pads are your quilted cotton,
right?
And they're ubiquitous. They come in from, you know, some of them come in from overseas, and you just can't compete price wise. Plus, there's not many quilters left in the United States of America. Not many quilters at all. I don't think there's a quilter left in New England to speak of. But we do a little bit of English pads. We have an English pad in the Dover catalog that we do pretty well with. It's, you know, it's a half pad, you know, a wither pad. And then, you know, we sell a lot of baby pads, and we do bareback pads, you know, on the English side.
Right.
We have some unique products.
I wanted to say that you guys are really known for your Western pads, and you do the ones that you know that everybody loves to see. You do the fancy pads, you do the Apache pads, and the cutter pads. You know, all different kinds of pads.
Well, what we do is we aim at all the different disciplines,
right?
You know, from cutters to reiners to bow racers to ropers, and then we have, you know, basic trail pads, you know, contoured or, you know, pre-contoured or just flat pads that they will self-contour. But there's a lot of trail riders out in the United States, and working cowboys, you still have working cowboys and ranchers that love the ranch pad. And then, of course, your little whiners.
I was going to say, why do they love your pad specifically?
Well, because of what the product does. The product, you know, the wool content, the felt, it's just good to the animal. It releases heat, wicks away the perspiration. The pad doesn't slip because the hairs and the felt adhere to the animal's back, so you don't get slippage. It's all the attributes of wool. And then when you get into wool felt, it's not just a simple case of, oh yeah, that's wool felt. There's different densities. Now, you can have a 1-inch wool pad that's very dense, meaning it's an inch thick, but there's a lot more material in there making up that 1 inch than pad Y. Our ranch pad, for instance, that's not nearly as dense as our roping pads, which makes it more expensive. I mean, there's more material making up the 1 inch, if I'm making myself clear.
Right, yep.
You know, and then you have the wool content. You know, the more wool you have, the more expensive it is. But our ranch pads, for instance, that's a blend. That's like 50% wool, 50% other. But that's enough wool to do what we want it to do, and we keep the price point down. It's, you know, it'll
now,
it'll
what's your most
heat,
popular pad?
Slip. Well, our most popular pad is probably our ranch pad, both the what we call the rancher and the contoured rancher. Because, you know, there's so many more trail riders in the United States and other disciplines. That gets to, mm-hmm. That's because of the population you aimed at. But we have what we call a pressure relief pad with the shims in it, because you have a lot of ill-fitting saddles out there. And these shims allow you to take a pair of scissors, or you can remove the shim. You can use two. There's three on each side. You can use two. You can use one. You can use all three. Or you can cut them up. Depending where your hot spots are, we're having a saddle fit problem. And those are big sellers. But everything in the catalog is a big seller. Other than that, it wouldn't be in there. It wouldn't be in there.
Right.
But functionality is the key to the product. I mean, the products are pretty and all that. Everyone wants pretty, but functionality is the key. But getting back to wool felt, we probably have, I don't know off the top of my head, but we have probably 15 or 16 different combinations of wool felt. I'm just talking about different blends. You know,
right.
then we have a product in there called virgin wool. That material is extremely clean. It's combed, so it's clean, clean, clean. Virgin wool. And none of these products have ever been in the marketplace before. It's not a reclaimed product. But anyway, do you have any more questions?
Well, I do know that Lisa, who is our contact there at Norco, who's setting up our trip, uses one of your pads and swears by it. And
thank you.
I talked to her yesterday. She's like, I use that pad every day. Now,
well, that's one complaint we get. They last too long.
Well, that's a good complaint.
Well, hopefully they get dirty and grundy and they get thrown away and the folks will buy a new one. But
well,
they do last.
That's
for sure.
Do you wash wool pads? Do you wash them?
Well, hot water and wool don't get along. To answer your question, yes, you can wash them, but like a Western pad, you just brush it, you know, hit it with a hose. You can put soap on it, but then hit it with a hose. Use cold water. Just hang it on a fence to dry. But you don't want to use hot water with wool. It'll break down the fibers. And there's no need
to. Put it in a washing machine? Even an English one?
No, too big.
Okay.
Put it in the back of your truck and drive through the car wash.
Oh, there's an idea.
No, it's too big to, you know, the pads are too big and bulky.
Yeah. Oh, because it's the felt. Yeah, because it. Now, some of our listeners, especially those of us who ride in English disciplines, wool felt is not a common material in the English business these days. It used to be many generations ago. Explain to folks, there's wool felt and there's sheepskin that has the wool still attached to it. What exactly is wool felt? How do you go from a sheep to wool felt?
Well, you're talking apples and oranges when you get into.
So not so much its characteristics, but how do you physically get wool felt? A lot of people don't even know what wool felt is.
Okay. Yeah, the first thing you do is you buy fibers. Just stick up a big ball of fibers. You're essentially making a pudding. So you buy this big ball of fibers, and that goes to the felt factory.
Now the
you
fibers
buy that
are
for,
what?
The fibers can be of any textile material. It could be wool.
So felt is a generic term.
Felt is a generic term.
Felt from wool. Gotcha.
Right. You could have synthetic materials or you could have wool materials.
Got it.
So what you do, I mean, just think of this big bale, like a big bale of hay, except it's fibers. And it goes to a factory that has carding machines. So this stack of hay, which was really felt, goes through this machine. It's flattened out, and the machine has huge needles that come down. And what you're doing is you're compressing this material into the form you see, sheets of felt. It's manufactured in rolls. So the needles that come down compress the felt and make it into the finished product through this big, huge piece of machinery. As a matter of fact, all our felt is run through a metal magnet. Because in the process, needles break off, and you can end up with metal in the felt. So diamond wool, everything we do goes through a metal detector, and we reject product if there's metal in there.
And I suspect those cheap imported versions may not do that.
I can't
just
answer
saying.
That. But,
just saying.
You want the sometimes you want the horse to go faster, but not because he's getting
right.
a needle in his rump. But that is needle punch felt.
Huh.
But now there's another type of felt. So in other words, felt can be synthetic materials. It can be wool fibers. You can felt textiles into a finished product. But then you've seen felt hats.
Yes.
That's a completely different process. That's not needle punched. That's a water-based product. That's how they make felt hats. In fact, there's saddle pads out there. It's called pressed felt, not needle punch felt. I won't mention brand names, but press felt is absolutely beautiful product. The problem with pressed felt in the equine industry, those fibers lie horizontal, whereas needle punch felt, the fibers are vertical, up and down. What happens over time with pressed felt, it'll continue to felt because of the sweat from the animal, the water, the heat. That pad will actually continue to felt, which means it'll keep getting harder and thinner. Whereas needle punch felt, because the fibers are vertical and with just a little bit of synthetic in there, it will not continue to felt. You don't want the pad continue to get harder.
Right.
So that's what happens.
That's making sense. You don't want it to turn into a piece of cardboard.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Cool.
So
and
that's
you know what,
why
I have seen pads like that, used pads that you see around, and they're crunchy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That'll happen with, you see these white synthetic pads out there, they're all synthetic. Yeah, those will harden up because it's just synthetic fiber. But the pressed felt, although it's beautiful material and very expensive, unfortunately that'll continue to felt. So it'll get hotter and thinner.
There you go.
That's
well,
why we go with the needle punch.
You can find more about Diamond Wool Pads at diamondwoolpads.com. And if you just Google it, I did this morning, you'll find many retailers who are selling your pads from around the country. And I'm sure
every state in the union.
Okay, cool. And you can order them online or find them at your local retailer where you live as well. Jim, thank you so much for coming on with us today, and thank you for helping out with the trip to Norco. We really appreciate that. DiamondWoolPads.com. Thank you, Jim.
You're very welcome.
All
bye
right,
now.
Bye-bye. And there's everything you wanted to know about wool felt.
I had no idea.
I didn't either. I don't know a lot about textiles and materials, so... whatever we can learn about that is great. And I want to remind everybody that our Norco trip is happening the end of the month. We will be flying into there on Tuesday the 29th, and we'll be live with an audience. You can actually come over if you live in that area and want to join us. On the 30th, we'll be at the Purina America's Country Store there in Norco on the 30th from 6 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. Western, Pacific time. So I have to get up early that day. And we will be there recording live in front of an audience. And then the next two mornings, we'll be doing our show live from different places in Norco. So you definitely want to tune in those days. We're going to have a lot of fun. She has a ton of guests lined up for us. So that's Norco. Thank you to Lisa from First Time Events for putting all of that together and helping make all the arrangements. We really appreciate it. Well, today we have a song for you from a lovely girl who we recorded a show with yesterday afternoon, Jamie and I did, for Thanksgiving. You're going to hear this show on Thanksgiving. It's one of our special musical episodes. This girl was recommended to us by our friend Templeton Thompson. She is absolutely terrific. I think Jamie described it yesterday that she has the voice of an angel or something like that, something with wings. And she's absolutely right. Her name is Tiffany, Jamie?
DeRosier.
Thank you. I couldn't say her last name. The whole show, I couldn't say her last name. So Tiffany DeRosier, here's just a little sampling of what you're going to hear on Thanksgiving Day from Tiffany say it again.
DeRosier.
Thank you.
Hearing the silence, it's getting harder.
That was Tiffany DeRosier. I said it.
Good
Look, that's
job.
The first time in 2 days. And you're going to hear her special musical episode with us here at Horses in the Morning on Thanksgiving Day, the 24th. You can look for that coming up. She was a lot of fun and has some terrific music. Today we are brought to you by Omega Alpha. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen over there producing today. And the highlight shows, excuse me here a second, the highlight shows for this for today from the Horse Radio Network are the driving radio show that I did with Wendy, and we're talking about fjords. We have a nice lady on from the Pacific Northwest Fjord Promotional Group, and we talk all about fjords and the different uses of fjords and the really cool names and how they get them to look like that and stand up like that and all that. You know, I did have a question for her, because you know what a fjord looks like, right, Jamie? They're the horses that have this, their mane sticks up about 4 inches, and they have the black stripe or brown stripe down the middle.
I told you that the first horse trial I ever did, the winner of my beginner novice division was a Norwegian fjord.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I asked her, I said, do the manes ever grow out and, like, fold over? Because, you know, you never see them that way.
Yeah, said, never.
Yeah, Yeah, she said they do. She said they grow out just like normal horses, but she said they look terrible. She said the hair goes everywhere. It goes to both sides. You can't control it. It's very thick and unruly. So that's one of the reasons that they do it that way, is because you just can't do anything with it. The hair, you just can't do anything with it. So
and
they
don't have to braid. Hello. I mean, how
that's
much
true.
Of a time saver is that at horse shows?
That's true.
Don't have to braid.
That is true. But it was a lot of fun. We talked to her about that. And then Dr. Ying also answered a listener question on acupuncture. And she also taught us about the bladder meridian, which was the conversation that was happening when I was falling asleep from my sugar crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then over on the Western Radio Show, Alan and Tammy sent us this show after they actually did their show after they called and harassed us yesterday morning. And they explored the world, and I have to give Alan and Tammy credit on this one. They dived into halter horses, the world of halter horses on the western side, which, as anybody that listens to our show knows, or listened to me for the last couple of years, I'm not a big fan because they've always had their horses way too fat. I mean, the things can barely trot, and I've always had a problem with that. And the first thing Alan and Tammy did, they had the J.T. Mitchell on, who is 150-time world champion in the halter classes, and they called him on the carpet on that immediately, right out of the gate. And apparently there's a lot of changes, and I have been told this, there's a lot of changes happening, and they're trying to get back to more performance-rated horses rather than big, fat, can't-do-anything horses. And that's starting to change now, and he seems to be thrilled that the changes are happening and they're actually working. So.
That might be really interesting to listen to, because as a performance horse person, when you do find halter horses that are a little bit older, they seem to not have a great foundation. You know what I'm talking about, like their legs and their feet and all this. And so, you know, I really have strong opinions about things like that, and maybe if it is starting to change, I could I'm getting mad even thinking about it, so I should probably listen to this and see what changes are afoot in the halter world.
You probably should, and you would have been proud. I was surprised, because I know how Alan feels the same way you and I do, and I was surprised that he had him on at first, because I know how he feels, and then I was actually surprised at this guy's answers too. And that Alan really did call him on the carpet right out of the first thing in the interview. So it's an interesting show. It'd be worth listening to. You can find both of those at horseradionetwork.com. They're now live up there.
See, Alan and I agree on some things.
Yeah.
I find that amazing. The Georgia Bulldogs and our dislike for giant horses with little tiny teacup little feet. Because like we talked about yesterday when he called in to us, there's sort of – wish us a happy 1 year anniversary. or is that Monday? you know, we discussed the fact that there are some similarities, but yet, you know, he's still Alan.
You know, they must have just called us before they started recording, because on the tape I heard a little chitter chatter between them about the conversation with us and how Alan felt abused by you, that you were abusive.
Oh.
He's going to be filing a workers' comp complaint, I think.
And then I'm
going to
daily post photos of Oompa Loompas and halter horses on his page.
You noticed, though, yesterday he didn't bring up Oompa Loompas once.
Yeah, I know.
He was good. He was good yesterday. I was really surprised, actually, that he didn't. He was thinking it. I could tell he was thinking it. I could just tell.
Well,
hey, we have...
Ever since he saw me going to that Garth Brooks concert with the hat that he appreciated and the small, very small amount of bling that I was wearing, I think I have... He has new respect for me.
Yeah, you definitely gained some respect that day in Alan's mind. I think he only thought you could wear breeches and a helmet. And when he saw you in your cowboy hat and, you know, looking all hot there, I think you gained some respect, definitely. Well, before we talk to thehorse.com, let me just bring Stephanie on here. She's filling in for Christy today because I think Christy's out doing something really cool, isn't she, Stephanie?
Yes, I think she just won a gold medal with her team jumping out of an airplane.
Really?
So, yeah, she's doing very well.
She's at the National Skydiving Championships, if I remember right.
I believe that's what it's called, yes. So.
And she just won a gold medal with her team?
It sounds like it. I can't remember. It was like 8-way or 15-way or something. I don't remember 16-way, I guess, is what it would be, because I think that they match. They're even numbers, rather. But, she's having a good time out there and winning lots of awards.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Good for her.
She's something else. Mm-hmm. Braver than I am.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's true. Well, she said, and I just checked her Facebook page, she said, we did it. Gold in advance by 1 point on to 8-way. I have no idea what all of that means, but it means she's going to come home with a gold medal. That's not too shabby.
Yeah, she's doing awesome.
Well, terrific. Well, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to let Jamie take over here for your mm-hmm. segment. But first, looks like Dr. Jones is ready as well. But first,
Fantastic. We
have to do this.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and Chrissy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, hello, ladies. We've got Stephanie and we've got Dr. Jones on the phone. And what they're going to talk to us is part two, because we talked a little bit about leg wraps and wrapping injuries last week, and they're going to continue. And I'm not going to offer any opinions or any stories about myself, because I was informed that I will be yelled at by Dr. Jones. So I'm...
I was hoping you would share stories and comments. I would hope it makes it more
definitely.
Fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Jones, when it comes to my skull or my horse having boots on his back legs for the trailer, I choose my skull. So apparently you have a little bit of a disagreement with me. which is fine. I respect your opinion. So I'm going to let you ladies just take it away. Wound care, protecting legs, go. Love it. I'm going to learn.
Well, I respect your skull. So, you know, if it is not a safe environment to get the job done, I certainly say don't do it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't trailer either. I mean, there's other options than just, you know, the boots or wraps you're using. Hopefully you can try another option, I hope.
Bubble wrap.
Not trailer
yes.
at all.
On
I don't
you.
Know. Well, we were going to get into the support, the protection when riding, and actually there is support that's sometimes needed in veterinary care. So if you have a horse that's foundering or has a fracture on a leg, you want to support the other limb. 9 times out of 10, we use just a basic standing wrap, which is your cotton and your standing quilt on top, or vet wrap, just to hold some support to that leg so it doesn't continue to build up with fluid, get tired, things like that. But there are other wraps out there that people will use for riding. I wouldn't necessarily think that are good for support wraps, splint boots. Let's take those for example. That's what those are for. Those are to protect the splint bones from interference and getting pop splints. And those certainly wouldn't provide support on a horse that had fractured one leg and was leaning or standing on it a lot on the other limb. But so each of these different wraps that people are advertising are used for different. Just please use the ones that are meant for whatever sport or event or situation you're going into for you. And I would definitely do some research before you get in there. Just don't take the feed store's opinion or don't take the you know, person in the stall next to you, their opinion. Look into a lot of them.
So skid boots on cross country, not a great idea.
Probably not. Stephanie, what do you think of that?
Well, skid boots, they'd probably absorb some water when you're running through the water jump, right?
I would think. I've never used them.
I have no experience with skid boots because I'm of the eventing side of things as well, so...
Yeah, me neither. I just know that they are there, and they're always at the tack store, and they are just these giant, huge boots, and they're usually on sale. And so I looked at them once, and I was like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. I don't need that much protection underneath the fetlock, you know? Like you could shoot it, and the bullet would not penetrate.
Nice. Yes. Very sturdy.
But, you mentioned a very good point there, Jamie, that there's so many options out there that, again, they just need to do homework. I believe the horse has got some links that they're going to be putting on Facebook for articles and such that they've done on certain types of leg wraps and boots. But, you know, just the general ones, splint boots you hear about, and, again, those are used to just keep the horse from interfering, splits, and they're jumping, running, galloping, bell boots. I commonly recommend those for horses that have special shoes on, egg bar shoes on the front feet to help out a podiatry situation, and those help keep them from yanking the shoe off. That's the primary thing. Or if they've been interfering and they continually get cuts on their heel or you got a heel injury, bell boots work great for that. The polos, a lot of them use those, certain colors and certain disciplines. It's kind of funny how that runs that way. But the polo wraps are used to protect the legs, can, you know, warm up the leg because they're kind of thick. They're fleece almost and probably shouldn't be left on for long periods of time. There's Professional's Choice. I've recommended their boots for those who have had major suspensory apparatus injuries. That would include the deep digital flexor tendon, the superficial digital flexor tendon. Those they start to wear when they start to bring them back into work so they don't overuse those ligaments or tendons, and they shouldn't be used the entire time the horse is ridden unless it warrants it by medical reasons because they can become used to it, like using a cross chore, some sort of item that's from actually rehabbing the injury back to its best shape. So,
okay, question for you about the polo wraps because I've had this discussion, I say in finger quotes in the air, discussion with some other people about polo wraps. And when using a polo wrap, that you're going to go out and ride, say, dressage, and you're going to go out in an arena and you're going to do some riding, do you wrap down the cannon bone and around underneath the fetlock or just down the cannon bone and back up?
I've seen it both ways. Without that scoop along the below the fetlock, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I've seen it both ways, and I have seen horses get bandage sores under the fetlock from doing that. So I caution those that might have closely clipped hair to be careful of that. They are doing, I know a lot of them are doing that for support of the fetlock, and the polo wrap does not have support to give you for that. It's more of a protection than it is a support wrap. At that point. So if the horse is used to it, they're used to doing it, that's fine. I don't think it's going to make a big difference between being under the fetlock or above the fetlock in the support of the limb. But in protection, if they keep nicking themselves in the fetlock area, yeah, maybe that would be a great idea.
Okay, good. Because somebody told me that absolutely you should never, ever wrap a polo wrap underneath the fetlock. And I thought, I've been doing that my entire life because, like you said, they, you know, they track up and they kick themselves in the fetlock. Then you've got that padding there.
Yep.
And so I was just making sure that, because I thought that was out of left field. Never, ever, ever.
Yeah, I've never heard never, ever. I just see differences of training barns doing it. And, you know, if you think about the horse and the passage and pee off, because since you brought up that discipline, they are moving very closely with their legs, or a canter pirouette. They're possibly getting close in the fetlock area as they're moving. So those nicks can occur a lot easier than maybe even pop splint.
Okay. Okay. And then I think we were also going to talk about protection when shipping your horse.
Oh, you really want to roll right into that. Well, I just wanted to mention a couple things about the wraps real quick for support protection.
Right.
Heat under the wraps, wetness under the wraps. Those are really, really big issues that you have to worry about. The heat under the wrap, not so much unless you're leaving it on for long periods of time, and I mean after you've ridden the horse, things like that. Everybody always ices down their legs after a large event, like an endurance trail or competitive trail riding, an eventing person. They'll ice the limbs down, a reining horse. They'll ice the limbs down so that they can help get the edema out of there. Don't leave those wraps on there thinking you're getting the edema out because all you're doing is just still heating up the leg. You need to cool it off.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason for that is the moisture that's underneath that limb, because they are sweating underneath there, is going to bring fungal and bacterial infections, and then you'll have stoved-up legs because you're going to start getting a cellulitis and possibly a secondary bacterial infection. So those are two biggie things. Last but not least, my quick story had clients concerned about their horses out in the pasture during a hurricane, worried about their limbs getting hurt. They threw splint boots on the horses to protect their bones and their limbs because they didn't have enough polo wraps to put on all the horses, and they had bandage sores from the polo wraps, and they had major swellings from the splint boots on those horses because they were just on way too long.
Oh, interesting. Huh. And something that I think we spoke about a little bit yesterday, Erin, was the when you need to wash these things after we use them too. Like if you're using them to ride, you know, hose them down and make sure that, you know, sediment hasn't accumulated under them from the arena or wherever you happen to be, or little burrs from the trail ride, right?
Absolutely. Burrs from the trail ride is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, definitely clean them, hang them to dry. Make sure that they're dry before you put them on too, because that's just another source of trapping moisture. You've already started off with the wet environment.
Yes. I was telling Erin yesterday that I can still smell my wolf boots, my brushing boots that I have on my event horse. The pair that I have, or actually the set of four that I have, I can remember what they smell like when they're wet. It's like a smell that I'll never forget, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I say they get sweaty and nasty, and then you run through mucky water jumps and everything. So, yeah, the washing of those are definitely important. And, I mean, if you don't, the Velcro won't stick anymore. I've tried that one. I've done
exactly.
Everything the lazy way first and then tried to, like, tune it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll move on to the shipping since somebody's chomping at the bit to make their comments about losing their head.
I'm done. It's your show here.
If you have been in my environment, which is 19 years of vet practice and, oh, gosh, I can't even remember how many years of riding with veterinarians any day I had off school, and I'm telling you, it was any day I had off school. I was at the veterinary clinic waiting for a truck to go into and ride to their calls. You see these trailer accidents, and high-end horses, backyard horses, doesn't matter. If they're not wearing any protection on their legs, the cuts can be life-threatening, life-ending, very, very bad cuts. You have to remember that from the hock down, basically, and from the knee down is a good cutoff in your brain. There's really no muscle under that skin. It just goes skin to bone or skin to tendon or skin to blood vessel. It's there's nothing really there to buffer it and bump it. you know, you've got the body, you've got the chest, they've got a little bit of meat there where in the rear end that they can take a bruise and they can take a, you know, blunt cut there and just expose muscle. Granted, that's not a pretty thing to see either, but you're not cutting into anything that would support them to stand, and horses have to stand. So I am a big advocate of putting some sort of shipping wraps on the horse when you're going 5 minutes down the road or 20 minutes down the road to the vet clinic, to your trainer, to a clinic, to sell the horse, anything like that. I highly recommend. The other thing is, as you're getting your horse used to trailering and they're still a little skittish getting out the pole protector, I know this is about wraps and stuff, but a pole protector over the ears, I don't know how many of those cuts between the ears I've had to sew up at a show that they've arrived and they need to show and they need to get this done and everything's in a hurry and they were in a hurry and the horse normally trailers fine. There might have been a strange horse in the trailer or they were in a hurry and they fed off of the anxiety of the trainer or the owner and they wallop their head. Getting off a trailer even, they'll cut themselves. Not necessarily the act of getting on. Getting off, they'll cut themselves. So I'm just a huge advocate of the actual shipping boots. You can do the standard polo wraps or you can do a standard standing wrap with cotton and a standing wrap on top or vet wrap on top. But you have to remember those really only fit between the hock and the fetlock or the knee and the fetlock. So you provide protection of the cannon bone but not major joints. And if a horse has an injury to a joint, their ability to do any kind of athletic ability they were doing previous is decreased immensely because you've just damaged a part of their body that they need to move in a fashion. So if you've got a jumper, you've got an endurance trail ride horse, you've got an eventer, you've got a dressage horse, it doesn't matter. They're going to need that joint to stay in its most pristine environment that it's been made to be in. And any injury that opens that up to the environment just invites devastation. So I hate to be the doom and gloom on it, but I can tell you I've worked at least a dozen trailer accidents, and almost all of them, they've not had any kind of wrap on the horse's leg, and the legs have had some major injury to them. Some we've had to euthanize, and some we haven't. Horses are crippled, you know, for a certain period of time. It does not protect against fractures. Fractures are going to happen. It may help a little bit, but it's the cuts that you got to think about that they can cut themselves on, the partitions. Sometimes the interior is put together with screws that may not lay flush. They may have backed out a little bit. Anything you think of could cut those legs. So, Stephanie,
if there's a sharp edge, the horse will find a way to find it. So,
and they'll put it in the most precarious place, right over the
door.
They
will, indeed. Indeed. So I can remember that we painstakingly learned how to do shipping bandages for pony club inspections years and years ago. And that was always from, like, below the hock or below the knee all the way to protecting the cornet band. And, you know, it's funny because I don't think I ever owned a pair of shipping boots that cover the hock, but I think those are pretty common now, aren't they?
Very common. They're very common. They're Velcro. They don't fit snug like your wraps do that you would learn in pony club, but you just got to get the right size to make them fit snug. You don't want them zipping around the leg like, you know, it's ringing around a barber pole or something. You want them to fit snug. So if they don't fit snug, please return them, get the right size. Some companies have ways you can measure for the legs, but definitely make sure you have the right size. Don't be hesitant at all to return them and say, you know, it doesn't fit. I need to get the proper size, and I made a mistake, because the fit is paramount for those. That's for sure.
So I think what I think I've learned out of all of this is that Jet's back legs are more important than Jamie's head.
Okay, so I will have to tell a story. Sorry, Jamie. I have little pony clubber that was going 20 miles to her lesson. It was a clinic lesson with all the pony club people. And somebody was coming the opposite way on a two-lane road that they've driven all the time. And I guess this person was texting, they think, and crossed over the line, was heading straight for the truck and trailer. So Dad was driving, and Dad veered off the road to avoid getting hit dead on. And, of course, the trailer is that extra weight back there. He got off the road, and the trailer flipped over sideways. The little pony inside had major cuts from the hock all the way down. Mm. Thank God no major blood vessels were cut. There was bleeding, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like a major artery. No tendons or ligaments were cut, but there was a minor fracture that this pony did entail. As we're cleaning it up, the one thing you have to think about is the horse is in shock. So we're putting it on IV fluids while we're standing there by the side of the road waiting for another trailer. We're cleaning out the wound. And my associate, who was with me at the time, working for me at the time, made a comment that she will always bandage her horse's legs, even though she's only going 20 miles down the road to her horse lesson after seeing what happened to this pony. Mm-hmm. And they were literally 10 miles from their house, if that, maybe 8 miles from their house, as they were heading off to this little clinic.
Now, Dr. Jones, I'm not going to argue with you saying that it is not a necessary part of, you know, shipping a horse. I own shipping boots, and every other horse of mine wears them on their back legs. I was simply making the point that between head and feet, I'm going to have to work with it. Jen just typed to me on our little IM chat thing to try putting a piece of duct tape down his leg from right below his hock down to his fetlock and walk away. Because after cross country, I can't put standing wraps on this horse's back legs. I can't put shipping boots on. I can't even put cross country boots on. This is like my rescue horse. So he's got issues. So any way that you know of as a vet to teach a horse to be okay with it?
Well, first thing I always say with horses is consistency. Always keep doing the same thing. Make sure it's non-threatening. The same thing over and over and over. And they'll start to get to the point that they accept it. They really will. I've had horses that were needle shy. And after, it took me 7 years, and I only see them once or twice a year, that will now let me stick them with a needle. But we had to find what made them happy while I was doing it, and we just consistently did that same thing over, whether it was a bowl of food in front of them, carrots, apples, whatever it was, their buddy standing next to them, something that made them more relaxed in the environment. So that's the first thing is consistency, make it a pleasant experience. Second thing is...
Look at it this way, Jamie. You only have 6 more years to go. You're going to you see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
And nice. Secondly, as a veterinarian, there are drugs. You could drug them, wake them up with the boots. And I'm telling you that because we've had a few bad trailering horses. We've left Dorm Gel with those clients, and that's a new product that's been out for a year and a half now. Or maybe it's just been a year. Anyway, it's a gel that goes under the tongue. It's sedation. It does not make them as knocked out as you've seen some of the horses that get their teeth done or sheath cleaned or whatever surgery performed. They are very relaxed, and they get on the trailer a lot easier. So we've used them for trailering horses. You might be able to give them that. You got to wait 40 minutes after you give it and then go ahead and do whatever you need to do. So you could probably put the wraps on and get them on the trailer. The other thing is holding a front leg while you do the back leg, which I'm guessing you may have already tried that trick. You hold the front leg of the same leg you're working on in the hind limb because they usually stand on their diagonals. So meaning if you're doing a left hind, somebody holds up the left front, and that means they'd have to, in order to kick you, they'd have to lean completely to their right-hand side and fire out, which they don't really kick.
Mm-hmm.
And always have somebody cover the eye because they can see you and they're going to aim for you. If you cover the eye on that side, they'll just be kicking blindly into the air. They may get you. You're in your masked body next to them, but they won't nail it if they can see you. So
those are my simple wounds. It'll only be a glancing wound, Jamie. It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what I'm going to do. If you will give me, let's see, what is today? Today is November 2nd. If you will give me 30 days, so when you come back on December 7th, I am going to have a photo. You got to give me 30 days. It's going to take me that long. I will give you a photo of my horse in shipping boots.
All right.
Fantastic. I love to hear that.
Sounds like a deal.
I love to hear that.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge, and I'm going to try to live up to it. I'm going to start with a piece of duct tape on his back legs and then maybe some who the heck knows what I can get around his back legs, but that's my personal challenge. I've got to improve this horse. He's got to be a better dude. So you're inspiring me to get some shipping boots on him. I'm writing it down. Let's see, December 7th.
And for horses like that, those Velcro ones that have three pieces of Velcro to go across the front are the best ones to use.
That's
you
the ones I
on
have.
The,
they're quick.
Yeah.
I can,
you place
I
them
can
on the back side and
fast.
Wrap those three pieces around, and you get your face out of the way.
Mm-hmm. I can see
and they'll
the
walk really
Craigslist.
Funny.
I can see the Craigslist ad now in Phoenix, Arizona. A human shield wanted for Kermit.
Nice.
But see, I think the biggest thing that nowadays that we don't do is we're not living with our horses like in the old. Now, granted, there's been boarding barns around forever. But there was more, as they call horsemanship, where the people actually lived with their horses and knew, you know, the horses knew them. And the horses knew they weren't a threat. And I'm not saying your horse thinks you're a threat, Jamie. But there is not a consistency. When people hit a roadblock that they normally can do with their other animals, their other horses, but they can't do it with this particular horse, they hit that roadblock and they give up. And if they can try to work through that roadblock in a consistent manner, which I think is what all the trainers are out there teaching, the Pirellis, the John Lyons, it's all consistent. Make it a good environment. Make it something they want to do kind of treatment. They all have their different avenues of getting there, but it's a consistency. You'll probably hear that frequently from those trainers, is everything is a consistency.
Okay, well, we've worked through a lot. This is just our next step. This is another big hole that he has. So I'm going to make it my mission to get some boots on this horse because, by God, he's going to, you know, someday run training and hopefully prelim and maybe intermediate. So he's going to have to learn to have some boots on his back legs, and you're my inspiration. We're going to do it.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Good.
Well, thank you
so much.
I'm glad
to hear that.
And two, we were talking about the support and protection. We actually ran an article on our website a little while back on some of the research that's been performed on these bandages and wraps. And I will make sure that I post that to the Facebook page for Horses in the Morning.
Yeah, and we've also got a video up online that you already posted on how to wrap your horse. And this is just that kind of stuff that we just all need to have and need to rewatch and relearn and restudy. So if you do think you know everything, go watch this again. Maybe you'll learn something new. It's thehorse.com, and then it's on our Facebook page, How to Wrap a Horse's Leg. So check that out, please. And then go to thehorse.com for pretty much any information. And again, it's floridaequine.com. Is that right, Dr. Jones?
Yes. Yeah, it's Florida spelled out, floridaequine.com. And again, you know, I learn something new almost every day, or at least once something to be learned about horses, whether it's a different brush that's out there. There's always something to learn. So please don't ever think you know it all and you don't have time to read some of these articles that are out there.
And obviously you can contact Dr. Jones anytime, 24 hours a day. She will be taking your call. No, I was kidding.
Nice.
You'll find her for
AAP.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody, thank you so much, Stephanie, for filling in. And we will talk to you guys again next week and maybe part three if you didn't get all the bandage stuff done. Maybe you got it all done. I don't know. Okay, good. I told you I wasn't going to interrupt, and then I did, and so it's all my fault. So, again, horse.com, floridaequine.com. Thanks, you guys, very much. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jamie and Glenn.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it. That wraps up our show for the day. We're glad you joined us today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Tomorrow, it's all about what, Jamie? What was that? I forget already.
There's some small races on Friday and Saturday. We will be making our Breeders' Cup picks. I have sent the entries to Glenn, and we will be making our Breeders' Cup picks, not for all the races because that would be really boring and it would take like 2 hours. So it would be boring to some people like Glenn. So please note that tomorrow you will want to write these picks down. You will want to get your pens and your paper out and write these picks down because absolutely under no means should you bet on these. Please do not.
That's right.
You just lose money. So write these down so you make sure you don't bet on our picks.
And I think Jennifer will confirm this. We have the big Miglieri coming on tomorrow to talk about the Breeders' Cup too, right?
I believe we do. Yep, tomorrow morning, 9:30, the MIG.
All right, cool. He's always a lot of fun.
I'm going to stalk Donna Brothers. I know she's probably a little busy, whatever, but I'm going to try to get her on the show. We're gonna harass her because she's awesome.
All right, thank you, everybody. We appreciate you being here. Don't forget all the other shows in the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And don't forget, too, that you can follow, you can see all the show notes with the links to everything we talk about. You can find those at horsesinthemorning.com.
just look in the at the individual episode, and you're going to find all of the links, so you don't have to remember everything we talk about all morning. Thank you, Jamie. Have a great day, everybody.
Everybody, please have a fantastic day. Wrap your horse's legs and spay, neuter, and gelt.
Oh, that's the wrong one. There we go. I know how to do this by now. We've been doing it for years.
See you, Taylor's lunch.